Howdy doody.
And welcome to the fourth installment of the 100 Pockets Records podcast. My name is Kurt Stein.
I'm Luke Lerbecki. It's my full name.
Yeah, it's his full name. And we're going to be your host today.
I'm ready.
Thank you for listening. For those of you that have tuned into the few we've put up so far, interviews with Ira Glass, David Cross, Bruce Campbell from the Evil Dead movies. Again, this podcast is all about creativity, the creative mind, the idea of not working for the man and getting your ideas out there on your own. Being a self-made man in the arts, or woman, or transgendered person.
A self-made person.
A self-made human being, or don't want to discriminate against any reptilians, or
I don't even want to.
Dog people.
Think about the reptilians.
Yeah, we'll get into that later. But these first interviews, like we talked about, are all interviews I did with when I worked for Fever Pitch Magazine in the early thousands. And these were all interviews that were just me doing phone interviews with interesting people. Then I would edit them and transcribe them for the magazine. And so they were never intended for anyone to hear them. But it's kind of interesting to hear some of these frank discussions I have with some pretty interesting people. And today you're in for a treat because this is an interview I did with Chuck D from Public Enemy back in October of 2003. And I've been a fan of Public Enemy since, I don't know, I was 11 years old or something like that. And I gotta say, I was a little nervous talking to Chuck. But he always lays down some knowledge. He's a very humble man. And during the time of this interview, he was doing some discussion about the whole Napster thing and copyright and downloading music. He has a lot to say about that. He has a lot to say about the state of hip-hop as a culture and as an art form. What else does he talk about? Oh, and a really interesting thing is Chuck was way ahead of the curve as far as like what was going to happen with the future of music. So he has a lot of ideas about cutting out the middleman as far as labels and distribution and doing everything yourself, because he realized that pretty soon nobody was going to be buying records anymore. And he had some ideas ahead of the game on how to do that. And for those of you not familiar with Public Enemy or Chuck D, you must be in some kind of box somewhere, but I seriously suggest you go listen to some Public Enemy, because I would not be the person I am today, nor would my buddy Luke over here, growing up in rural Wisconsin, had we not had the influence of people like Jello Biafra and Chuck D to tell us how the world ran. You know, because
Be working in a warehouse.
Yeah, be working in a warehouse somewhere.
Believe in everything television tells us.
Exactly, and not really understanding
maybe saving up for a boat.
What's going on in the states of New Hampshire and Arizona. You know what I mean? Things like that. Public Enemy was like a newspaper in a way. And believe it or not, that stuff used to play on MTV. You know, so Luke and I got the extreme honor too. I've seen Public Enemy a few times, but a couple of years ago, it's very wonderful and very sad in a way, but we saw Public Enemy at the Oneida Casino, which isn't maybe the best place to see Public Enemy, but there was like a carpeted floor, and you know, it was a casino. So I think some people, I don't know if they get the 2-for tickets or something like that. I don't know how that works, free drink or something. But Public Enemy put on a great show, and Chuck and Flavor were there, and
I think it's $10 in chips.
$10 in chips. Uh-huh. A bag of chips.
Yeah,
and Professor Griff was there, and the security of the S1Ws, the security of the First World. So if you've never seen Public Enemy live, let me tell you what it looks like. There's Chuck D doing the hard rhyming. It's beautiful. Got an awesome DJ. I can't remember the DJ's name at this time, but, you know, it used to be Terminator X, who was a giant man who never spoke, with a high-top fade, wore big wraparound sunglasses, and spoke with his hands. So you've got Chuck D doing the hard rhyming, and you got Terminator X, you got Professor Griff, who's laying down the knowledge, and he's kind of like the leader of the S1Ws, which are a militant dance group that used to use guns on stage till people got so pissed that now they use samurai swords, and they got some fancy ass militant dance moves that are pretty awesome.
Swords are way cooler.
Yeah, and then to weigh all that off, you know, on the other side of the stage, you've got the one and only world's greatest hype man, Flavor Flav, you know. And after listening to this interview, you're going to understand Chuck loves Flavor.
Loves him. Has nothing but great things to say.
Ever. So all the people who are dissing about Flavor of Love and all that other stuff, Chuck seems to know what he's talking about, because definitely you scratching your beard is just totally getting picked up by the mic, just so you know.
found a bug.
You found a bug in there? It's all right. If you eat it, it's okay. But, like, Flavor's the... If all that other stuff was scary to white people, Flavor Flav was the guy who made you laugh and pulled you in. And, I mean, he can totally rock a crowd. Guy's got dance moves for days, and nobody yells into a mic better than Flavor Flav. But that show was great. We got to see some... they played the hits. Flav played some drums, mm-hmm. which was fun. And then we did get to see, you know, Luke and I have been to a ton of concerts in our day, but we saw the greatest fight between security and one human being that I've ever seen at any concert. Beats every metal show I've ever seen, every noise show. And Luke happened to catch it first because he was checking out the two auxiliary hype men / security guards that were working each side of the stage, right?
It seemed like they were just hype men, but apparently the hype men also serve some other role of security, at least the guy on our side. Guy on the other side, clearly not working as hard.
Please explain, because Luke had a lot to say about this, about the two different hype men and their abilities.
We were stage right? Correct?
We weren't stage right. We were... We were on the left side of the stage.
We were on the left side of the stage. He was stage right. Gotcha. Our guy's clearly working harder. He's dressed militant. The other guy was dressed like he just woke up from a casino hotel. He was sitting on a speaker taking pictures. Our guy, the older of the two hype men, what do you have to guess for an age? 50?
50-something, yeah, maybe.
Yeah. Not only doing a great job as a hype man, but then trouble broke out. The second he points into the crowd, this little swirl starts. And out comes one guy with about 14 people strapped to him.
Yeah, pushing their way through the crowd. And, like, there wasn't that many people there.
Yeah.
A few hundred people. And the swirling mess of security, and one dude comes out, lands on the carpet, the weird casino carpet next to us. There's three or four security guards on each limb. They still can't hold this guy down. There is a pile of people. We were trying to take photos.
Yeah. Picture didn't turn out. It's disappointing.
It was pretty amazing, though. It's one of my concert highlights of my life. But we got to meet Chuck afterwards, and he'd remembered doing the interview with me. That was really cool. He was a sweetheart. He was taking pictures with everybody and saying what's up to all kinds of people. And we were super impressed. Flavor wasn't around, so we decided to go to, you know, after meeting Chuck, that's quite a thrill. We went to the hotel bar to hang out for a while. And who should come walking downstairs to where the old ladies are hitting the machines and jing, jing, jing and all that stuff and drinking their life away? The one and only Flavor Flav to hang out with, apparently, his family, which appeared to be a bunch of white people. And they were looking at a photo album. So I really Luke was very curious as to the backstory of these people were from Kenosha or something. I don't know.
It was a couple of photo albums.
Yeah, there was something going on there that we didn't understand. But he had like a Cavassier and some Newports.
Didn't he say he was looking at photos with his family?
Yeah, he's like, can you guys leave me alone? Not to us, but to all these people who were bagging on him. Can you, you know, can you leave us alone? I'm trying to hang out with my family. But luckily, my buddy Daryl Pounds and I got our picture taken with him. It's very fuzzy and not very good, but I did have this arm around. No, I can't remember which arm it was, but one of my arms was around Flavor Flav.
You know, a thing I noticed about the whole show, too, when I was looking at him, he's just fuzzy. He's never actually in focus.
Yeah, he is kind of fuzzy, and it also, meeting Flavor Flav is like meeting a human cartoon character. Yeah. It's like meeting Fozzie Bear, Kermit the Frog, or something. Mm-hmm. Until he's standing next to you. Like, I could easily imagine me talking to a Muppet and just forgetting that there's a person with his hand up his butt. And with Flavor, it's the same way, but you just can't imagine that that's real until he's standing next to you, and then you're like, oh my God, it's Flavor Flav. And I'm surprised he just doesn't get the party jumping, at, you know, anywhere he goes. In the bathroom, anywhere. Sure. Anywhere he goes.
Hyping up the line at the bank?
Yeah, yeah. Whatever he needs to do. Burger King, wherever he's at. He already wears crowns, you know what I mean? But enough incessant babbling from us. We're going to turn things over to Mr. Chuck here and let him kick you down some knowledge. I'd like to remind you to please visit the 100 Pockets website, 100PocketsRecords.com. That's 100 spelled out. And check out some of our releases. We've got some interesting stuff coming up this summer and early fall. 4 or 5 new releases coming out, so please pay attention to that. And check out the albums we do have up there now. And you have any questions or comments or anything like that, feel free to email me, Kurt, K-U-R-T, at Fever Pitch. Well, I almost did the Fever Pitch one.
Mm-hmm.
No. Kurt at 100PocketsRecords.com. And that's also spelled out as 100. Or follow me on Twitter if you'd like. Look up Kurt Stein. I think my handle is KurtStein13. But at the end of this, we always like to add a special 100 Pockets track for you to listen to. And today we're going to feature the song Observer by my buddy Christopher Hoffman. I think you'll dig it. So without further ado, here's my interview with Chuck D from Public Enemy from October of 2003. We hope you dig it. Learn something.
Hello?
Yeah, is Chuck D available?
Speaking.
Chuck, hey, it's Kurt Stein from Fever Pitch Magazine, man.
What, man? How you doing, man?
Fantastic. I'm really, 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 really happy. Finally, we got around to running into each other. I've wanted to include you in our magazine for a while. We're a real startup company who's kind of focusing on counterculture music and politics,
right?
And we're kind of using your interview as one of the big launching spots for the political part. And man, if I hadn't listened to your stuff back in middle school and high school, I never would have been the musician I am today, or you know, even thought about starting up this company. So I want to thank you for that right off. So you just spoke in front of the Senate on Tuesday, right?
Right.
Last week, can you explain to me about some of the opinions you voiced, what the opposite opinions were, and what kind of came of that?
Well, number one, I'm actually writing a piece, which is also a letter, stating that, you know, I'm for the people, and I never thought that the industry at hand would be so greedy to the average person, or that come up with a scare tactic so they won't be involved in technology that helped make the situation exist in the first place.
Very true, very true.
I'm looking at, you know, on the other side, I'm looking at LL and Leo Cohen sitting behind him, and I'm like saying, you know, Def Jam and rap music was built off of exchanging music at swap meets and flea markets and mixtapes and sampling machines, and all of a sudden we're going to start talking about how mad people get when their music is going around the world or copyrights unprotected. My copyrights never felt protected in the middle of a record company anyway.
Yeah, very true.
I felt it was arrogant. I'm going to make my statement very much known in the next minute, and it's going to be a piece that's going to go up and it's going to ring loud.
Fantastic, man. I'm really happy that you decided to, you know, stick by the people rather than. Didn't you get into something happened with? I bought the Fine Arts Militia CD. That's fantastic, man. I got to see you speak in Chicago a couple years ago too, and I really dig that album. And didn't you? Was there a video involved with that or something? That something went down with MTV? I heard something about that.
What, about Fine Arts Militia?
Yeah, was that the one that was a problem? Something they...
No, it was Revolution by Public Enemy. It was, we mentioned A$AP Brown and Mamiya Abu-Jamal.
And because you mentioned them, they wouldn't put the album, they wouldn't put the video in the air?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh my God.
They didn't put the video in the air because it mentioned them and they didn't want to take a political stand.
Disgusting. So have you decided to, like, are you just getting fed up with the industry and trying to go your own way with a lot of things now, or?
Always been trying to go my own way right throughout, since 95. So, I mean, the internet was a saving grace.
Can you give me some comments on kind of the state of hip-hop right now, and what do you think's going on with, because, I mean, okay, I teach music theory and bass, and I got a lot of students who are, you know, from 12 to 18 years old, and when I mention rap to them, most of them, either if they're a big fan, you know, it's real thug stuff, otherwise they hate it and say that there's no good hip-hop out there, and I'm like, you just haven't been exposed to it.
Right, I think the problem is that the corporations have stepped in to seriously dominate the space of exposure of the medium to the masses. Hold on one second.
No problem, man.
Mr. Hodge. Yeah, I'm good. I'm doing this interview on the phone right now, so I'll be reachable, I guess, in another 10 minutes. Yes, sir. Peace. Yeah, did you get what I just said?
Yeah, I got what you just said. I mean, and what do you think because another guy we were trying to get is KRS-One. We're talking with him, his people, about getting an interview now too. And I know he's got a lot of stuff to say too about what's happened to the activism, not only in hip hop but in general. Where did activism go, and why has this been something that's been planned to keep us from, you know, talking about stuff or what? You know, like, are you, can you give me some opinions on just, like, the bling-bling thug rap industry and what's going on right now?
Well, my whole thing is, like, you know, there's an arrogance in America that is definitely, it's an arrogance in America that has leaked into the entertainment business, where the artists are concerned more about themselves than the people. And they know that marketing and promotion wrapped around under the guise of, well, you know what? Propaganda within the disguise of marketing and promotion can make the people submissive to something that they basically feel that they have no power to override. The bigger the artist, the bigger the celebrity in America, it seemed like people were flocking to it, almost like, you know, mice to the Pied Piper.
Oh yeah.
So I mean, when if you look at the source and all this, is gigantic corporations who basically want to make a product out of everything deemed tangible.
What do you feel the message is they're sending about? Not only hip-hop culture, but black culture in general.
They've reduced us into being merely entertainment with no voice, no worldly voice, or no public voice whatsoever. I think that the problem is that, for example, Billboard has reached a first where the top 10 rap records are in the top 10. But at the same time, all the records are pretty much saying the same thing, and they're merely entertaining. And nothing is wrong with the entertainment aspect of it, because this is music.
Right.
But what they've done is they've taken a wide panoramic culture and they've reduced it, narrowcasted it into a stereotype.
Do you... what do you think that message is sending to younger kids coming up?
Well, you know, I mean, black people are basically, you know, we're subservient to our radio stations, and BET, and these situations were at least black owned in the 80s and the early 90s. Now they're white corporate owned, and they've found a way that black is a product, and so therefore that's that narrow casting of the stereotype can kind of like really identify us as being this as opposed to all of the above.
Can you give me some comments on the mass corporate takeover of the media that's going on, like the consolidation of radio stations and TV stations and record labels and whatnot?
Yep, it's Big Brother all over again.
I see that. Can you tell me a little bit about Slam Jams and why you started that up and what the plan is with that? And
well, Slam Jams, I'm actually, you know, the whole key is to have three different tiers of distribution. One is the digital distribution through MP3s, through SlamJams.com, through singles that we firmly believe in. Number two is a midline situation where people can order the music online in the mail order program. And number three, offline distribution, we're going to be the first label to say, well, we're a 21st century recording company that will release our product through a DVD company. So we will release DVDs and alongside every album. So inside the packaging will be a world into itself.
Beautiful, man. Beautiful. Can you give me some comments on the Bush regime and what you think's going on in the world right now, and what their plan is, and how that's affecting America in general?
I've talked about the Bush regime.
Yeah, oh, I know. I'm sure you got lots to say.
I just think the arrogance of America thinking it's a cut above everybody else in the world has resulted in the rest of the world having an opinion that we can no longer, you know, turn our heads to, like, okay, they're upset at us. You know, this is not like baseball and the Yankees. This is human life in the world.
Very true. And where we think that our way of life is, I mean, we aren't going to be happy in the Middle East until we put a Walmart on every corner and we knocked out, like I was recently reading online, how we knocked out all their telephone communications, but now we're brokering in cell phone companies to come in and you know, fill the Middle East with you know, more cell phones and more American corporate ideas, you know?
Right.
Is PE going to be still putting out albums, or is...
Oh, why wouldn't PE put out... Why would not put out albums? The only way would PE would stop putting out albums is if Flavor Flav decides to not want to do records with PE anymore. Then that will change the dynamic.
What's Flavor been up to?
Well, you know, Flavor is a musician that we're trying to be able to corral his musicianship into making records that he wants to do, and solo-wise he wants to be able to create on his own and be able to go around the world.
He is actually, I've heard before that he actually plays a hell of a lot of instruments, is that right?
And plays them on stage and gets down.
Damn, man, that's phenomenal.
We're trying to corral that ability and that talent into actually making records, you know, and he doesn't like to spend a lot of time in the studio, so.
I gotcha.
We're going to bring the studio to him.
Where's going with this? Oh, you've been doing, you still been traveling a lot. Are you doing a lot of lecture tours? Is that mostly what you've been up to while you've been going overseas a lot, or?
Going out on Public Enemy's 49th tour, our fourth trip in Europe this year. It's the Make Love, Fuck War, Revolution Tour 2003.
Beautiful. Beautiful. So you guys are on tour with Public Enemy then?
Well, I mean, I wouldn't tour musically with any other group. Why?
Yeah, the Fine Arts Militia hasn't done any live spots.
Well, yeah, no, because really the Fine Arts Militia is its own self-contained outfit.
Okay.
Brian Hardgrove, who is the leader of the Fine Arts Militia, And he's actually the musical arranger in the Public Enemy band called P.E.
Oh, okay.
And the Seventh Octave is a ghetto metal squad engineered by Griff, who has Kyrie Wynn playing with us.
So you guys have been touring with a live band and everything now. Have you been doing that for a while?
Since the Millennium, yeah.
Beautiful, man. I would love to check that out. Are you going to be doing any tours of the States, or have you already, and I just missed you?
Greatest rap show on earth. We haven't done the United States since October of 2002, but we're looking to do it in June. It's the big world. So our 50th tour is going to be in South America, and our 51st tour is going to be in Australia, New Zealand, and South Africa. So
amazing. Are you, I guess, yeah, I know you got a lot of interviews to get on today, kind of wrapping this up. I know...
I do a lot of interviews because I'm talking to all the world at the same time. I'm talking to three continents today.
It's beautiful, man. We need people like you, though. Like, we got Jello Biafra coming up in the next magazine, too. I talked to him. I talked to... we're doing... Noam Chomsky's going to do a piece with us, too. And we're really hoping to make a publication that is not afraid to put out things that are anti-establishment and anti-industry. And we're one of the first... We also have a record label, and we're one of the very first... record labels that actually has its own magazine, which I can't see why that hasn't been done before, but it seemed like a good idea to us. But like I was talking about with the disappearance of activism before and stuff like that, to people who are interested in getting involved and making a difference in helping support voices they respect and, you know, getting their own voice out there, can you tell me any good places to go, or organizations to join, or websites to check out that are beneficial for that?
You might have to go to the digital affairs area of Rap Station, because those organizations will be slowly assembled on that page of rapstation.com.
Oh, okay, I gotcha. Have you been involved in any of the anti-war protests that have been going on lately? Have you spoken to any of them, or?
Well, you know, this is my 14th year on the lecture circuit, so.
Oh, yeah.
40 to 50 colleges a year, and at the beginning of the year, I participated with the Fine Arts Militia in the Not Our Name concert, so.
Did you, I just had it, and I just lost it. Did you expect, what is your, I guess, I mean, you've had a fan base for years, you know what I mean? But do you seem to think that most people have picked up on any of the newer stuff? Have you been able to score some of the younger generation through some of the stuff you're putting out, or?
Yeah, well, I mean, worldwide, yeah.
Worldwide, yeah. But, it seems like you guys are kicking ass overseas, but in America, is it still rough to...
Well, my whole thing in America, if you don't get on MTV, BET, you don't get on the radio stations, you're unexposed to your demographic.
Yeah, very true.
Go out the way, and then they'll end up telling you that, you have to buy your way there. I'm like, that's unacceptable.
Yeah, exactly.
So the thing is like, you know, we're very in America. We're very happy at being under the underground, and when the situation calls for it, you know, then we put on a great performance, a great show, and something that means a lot. Now, the flip side to that is that you say overseas, but shit, most Americans think that overseas is meaning just overseas to Europe. I mean, it's 6 other continents. It's 5 other continents to play with.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
So it's overseas, it's down below, it's over there, I mean...
And up above, and everywhere else.
And even in Canada, so, I mean, you know...
The Canadian market does seem a lot more open-minded when it comes to stuff along your vein. Did you find it hard to write... You wrote all the tunes for the Fine Arts Militia CD based off lectures you'd been doing, right?
Yeah, right.
Did you find it hard to narrow it down?
No.
You knew exactly where you wanted to go with that one?
Yeah. pretty much. I recorded in 2 days.
Awesome. Is there...
Vocals were recorded in 2 days, yeah.
Oh, okay. Is there any, I guess kind of wrapping this up, is there anything that you haven't done yet that you really have wanted to do for a long time or hope to do that you haven't had the means to do yet or the time to do yet or anything like that?
Well, I'm totally finishing up the network of rapstation.com and slamjams.com and publicenemy.com. Those are some of the main things. And as far as myself over the next year and a half, rolling out at least four to five books. They're different books, so they're not like, they ain't like they're all like philosophical books. They're different books, but at least getting my book imprint started in 2004 is just as important as having Slam Jams as the label to be innovative in DVD, CD with delivery.
Will you be publishing those yourself?
Yeah, pretty much.
Beautiful, man. I love to see artists doing their own stuff. Awesome. Well, Chuck, man, I got enough to work with here, I think. I'm going to let you get on to getting on to some more interviews. I really want to thank you for taking the time out to do this, and I sent Jolynn a couple copies of the last issue of the magazine. I'll be sure to send her some of the next one, and please let me know what you think, because we're trying to put together a list of artists, because what our problem is with distribution. A lot of people have seen some of the stuff we're writing about. Like, my brother's a philosopher, and he wrote a great piece on the illegitimacy of the Bush government and stuff like that. So it does turn away some people, but we're trying to consolidate a nice list of people who endorse the magazine to show the distributors that, you know, yeah, this is something that people want, something that people dig. So, yeah, let me know what you think when you get a hold of those.
Okay.
All right, Chuck. Thanks a lot, man.
All right, peace.
Peace.
Well, I learned something.
I think we all learn something.
Every time Chuck D opens his mouth, he learns something. The man can form a thought.
I'd like to call Chuck D right now and find out about things that are going to happen 7 years from right now.
I think that would be a good idea. I should also mention that you should follow Chuck on Twitter, because his tweets are very interesting, and he's not just tweeting nonsense. It's like deep thoughts about the music industry and about different things, and I don't think there's a lot of people doing that, and it's... he's somebody that you really should listen to. And also, I guess I should mention that young go-getter Kurt there, just not afraid of anything, that guy, huh?
No, he'd say whatever.
He'd say whatever, push his own stuff, try to toot his own horn, get any connections he could get made, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, I miss that guy sometimes, you know?
Yeah, and here we are.
Here we are, right? Not that anything's changed, except, you know... Luke's my good friend, but he's been teasing me all day because, you know, I've been working very hard at, you know, losing some weight.
I wouldn't
getting
say
stronger.
Teasing, I'd say it's more of an observation I made.
It's an observation he made, but okay, I've lost maybe 50, 60 pounds in the last year and a half, okay?
You look
great. I'm feeling trim, I'm feeling buff, I'm ready to...
Anytime we go somewhere, we have to hear about how good Kurt looks now.
Yep. And I'm just trying to, just not by me too. It's not just me talking about how good I look.
No, it's everyone else.
But I, you know, it's like, I'm trying to get down to like my Danzig weight, you know?
Sure.
Everyone wants to get down to Danzig size.
Yeah.
But, Luke.
You're just like a foot and a half too tall.
Yeah. Can you give me, your synopsis, Luke, of what you think of my personality?
Well, I just happened to mention that I thought you were maybe happier with more weight.
So you're saying, when I was 40 or 50 pounds heavier, I was jolly? Is that what you're trying to say to me? Was I jolly? For a second, let me push my belly out, Luke. Now look at me. Am I jolly now? Am I jolly now? Am I jolly enough for you right now?
No, you're just a mean, skinny guy now. Pushing out a gut.
It's not true, Luke. Even though I did go eat a burger, fries, and a malt with him tonight, the extra large malt, which he nodded his head and told me to get.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I did.
And now he's been trying to find some candy or beer or something to shove down my throat.
Ice cream. Thought some ice cream would make you happy again.
No, it's not. Ice cream does. I am happy. Can I say that any happier? Luke, I am happy. Dadgummit.
I know. We figured out that might just be my perception of fat people.
Yeah, it is, because people think people who are chunky are jolly. Maybe they're not. Maybe they just remind you of the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man or the Pillsbury Doughboy or something along those lines. That's marketing that's got squirreled in your head, son. That's what's happened right there.
You think it's all the Christmas commercials?
Was Jackie Gleason a happy man?
No. No, but see, everybody...
I can point out fat, mean people all over the place.
Yeah, but Jackie Gleason, nobody... See, it was their perception of him.
Oh, it's funny because he's mad. Yeah. Because he's fat.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Like, he was going to beat his wife, but everyone thought that was hilarious because he was fat. But Ike Turner actually beat his wife, and then everyone is all in arms because he was thin.
I hope fat people come and take over the world.
They don't have the energy.
They can.
But then they'll be thin people. Then they'll turn on each other.
Oh, it's such a debacle. Anyway, I'm glad you got to listen to that Chuck T interview. Next in the Lost Fever Pitch tape series, we have an interview with Andrew Alexander. For those of you who don't know who Andrew Alexander is, he is the founder of Second City. I believe both the Canadian one and the Chicago one. And so he's been around since all the early Saturday Night Live guys came through there, like Dan Aykroyd, you know, and Bill Murray, and, you know, up to, and John, and then all the Second City people like Tina Fey and Stephen Colbert and John Candy and Harold Ramis and all these great people. Was Harold Ramis in there?
I don't know.
Was he ever in there?
Maybe.
Eugene Levy, I mean, was, but Harold Ramis, I don't know if he was in Second City or where he came from. We'll have to solve that for next time. Or if you know, please write me at kurt@hunterpocketsrecords.com.
Clear this up.
Let me know if Harold, so I don't have to go on Wikipedia and find out if Harold Ramis was in Second City at all.
No, we'd much rather have you email the information rather than take the 10 seconds to find it ourselves.
Exactly. But anyway, you're going to have an interesting interview with Andrew Alexander. You're going to learn a lot about the industry. He tells some great stories about some of the people that have come out of that the Second City schools, and talks about Lorne Michaels coming to him for cast members and things like that. It's pretty interesting. But to leave you tonight, whenever the hell you're listening, this could be 3 a.m., could be 5 a.m., could be 6 a.m. I don't know why it's all a.m., maybe 3 p.m. We're going to give you 100 Pockets Records track by my buddy Christopher Hoffman from his EP called Induction. And this is a track called The Observer. And please, again, visit 100PocketsRecords.com. Check out some of the stuff we have and let us know what you think. Until next time, I'm Kurt Stein. And you are?
I'm Luke Lurbecki.
Thank you for saying... I keep thinking you're falling asleep. I keep feeling like I'm here by myself. And we hope you enjoy this, and we'll see you next time with Andrew Alexander. Bye-bye.
Tastes of burning gasoline, but you'll never get a clue. Broken lips and tricks, don't you know your house is made of sticks? The gun that always blew up when he comes around. Looking up into the starry night, giving up your only son. Moving swiftly, quickly underground. Observing, observing, coming, coming, coming down.